So we're on TWSBA's first episode of its new podcast. We should introduce ourselves, right?
Yes.
And I'm Patrick McBriarty with
Kevin Callahan, the director of Urban Boat Works in Camden, New Jersey. Frigid Camden, New Jersey.
Alex Severino. I am the East Coast Regional Facilitator for TWSBA.
And this is Patrick again, and I'm with All Hands Boatworks in Milwaukee and also part of the board of TWSBA working on the communications committee. And we decided to do a podcast. So Kevin, having done a bunch of writing for the communications committee, as we decided we'd try a podcast, right?
Yes, we're excited about it.
So TWSBA, like, people are probably wondering, if they don't know already what TWSBA is, what does that mean? What does that acronym stand for? What do we do? What do you guys want to field that?
Go ahead, Alex.
I was just going to fill in the acronym. TWSBA is Teaching with Small Boat Alliance. And that's really what we are, an alliance of organizations all around the nation and some organizations even outside of the United States that come together and unite sharing ideas, lessons, struggles, and accomplishments.
Wow.
2 years ago, maybe, I guess, 2022, 3 years now, I went to my first TWSBA conference. It was in Port Townsend, Washington. And when I tried to explain what TWSBA is to people, volunteers here at our boat shop, I say, after the first night, there was a bar that we all went back to. And there had to be hundreds, 100 educators, boat builders, TWSBA administrators. And I looked around and everyone looked like a boat builder. And it felt like something out of a movie scene. So I said to my friends and volunteers here, I said, I'm not sure what a boat builder is supposed to look like. But all 100 of these people down there look like boat builders.
Right. It's sort of itinerant carpenters and trades folks, maybe with a little bit of a hippies-ish feel would be how I describe these guys and women that do the boat building.
Yes. And let's not forget the sailors. So we have a lot of mariners. They have their own personality. People that are just passionate about working around water or on water like a boat. So boat builders and sailors created an atmosphere of something that I always love to describe of togetherness. Everybody just wants to talk to each other. And I remember in Port Townsend, that bar, and it was overwhelming. I was shocked to see how many different people had the same attitude that I had and the thrive to share it with the youth.
And we all dressed alike.
Yes.
Well, Alex, I met you at the Mystic Seaport TWSBA conference just in October and was very impressed with you and the regional directors now, three of them at TWSBA. And I know they're looking to hire an executive director. They're doing the interviews pretty soon. Many good applicants, I heard, saw in the newsletter. So I was very interested in your background, Alex, and I know I joked when you said you were from the Bronx because I'm a Yankees fan, and nice. I know you are too. So I knew right now, besides liking boats and liking the Yankees, that we would get along just fine.
Yes. Well, thank you for liking the Yankees.
Yes.
But yes, I am from the Bronx. I'm a native New Yorker, born in Manhattan, raised my entire life in the Bronx. And I was a very weird child because while everybody wanted to either do something in fashion, law school, doctor, I wanted to be the crocodile hunter. I wanted to be like Steve Irwin and take care of the wildlife and show everybody how beautiful nature was. But I felt very out of place in being in the inner city. And so it was just a very difficult thing for me to kind of understand who I was for a very long time because I just did not feel like the rowdy New Yorker or, you know, the interpersonal bubble in the train New Yorker. I kind of really wanted to work with people and be part of a really great community. And I guess I got that mindset in my middle school because it was a small school. And with small schools, you have the ability to know all the teachers and counselors. And then when I went into high school, that was different for me. It was 5,000 freshmen. And so with that being said, I just did not feel like I mattered. And then as a kindergartner, I think I was always great with my academics. I was in the honor roll. But then when I went into high school, everything just fell apart because I felt that I was an adult in some ways with maturity and expectations and responsibilities. But then I was being treated like a child for 8 hours a day. And it just really messed up my mindset. And it led me into a state of depression when I was about 16 years old. And in my small animal care class, which was a very weird class, I went to high school literally to do small animal care, like trying to pursue that dream that I wanted that seemed so far away. And I had a classmate keep talking about how she was going on the river and that she saw a heron and that they're going to be working with alewives. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, where in Pennsylvania are you doing this? And she's like, no, it's in the Bronx. And I was like, all right, you know, you tell a lot of stories, but why are you trying to like come up with this, you know, this fib? And she's like, no, I'll take you. And at that time, Rocking the Boat was not very new. I would say I came in at 2005 and Rocking the Boat initially started around 1996. But, you know, at the time that I was there, this organization had a small little boat shop on Mount Eden, which was actually a corner store, like a deli mart type of space, but they transformed it into a boat shop. And they had a few shipping containers at the waterfront near Crescent Point. And that's where my friend took me. And I saw these amazing wooden boats, but, you know, with these amazing colors on it and names behind it. Phoenix always comes to mind because Phoenix was the first boat that I got on. And of course, she was painted red with a phoenix right on the back on the transom. And I was like, whoa, what is this amazing vessel? And they're like, all right, we're going on the river. And I had no questions. I just kept doing exactly what they told me because I was in it. I was immediately immersed in this experience. Mind you, this was after school. So I'm talking about like 4:30 in the afternoon. And I felt like I had more energy than I had the entire day at that moment. And as we were rowing, I spotted a black crown night heron. At that time, I did not know what that bird was, but now I do. And I just remember saying, that's not a pigeon. That's a wild bird. And I was shocked to see wildlife in the city. After that, I was hooked instantly. I went to my mother and my father and I told them I need to go. And they were like, absolutely not. It's in the middle of Hunts Point on the other side of the Bronx. And do you know what Hunts Point is? And so I said, no, I don't know, and I don't really care. And they say, well, Hunts Point is known for things like gangs, prostitution, and drugs. I don't know why in the world you think I will let you go. Well, at that moment, I realized I know how to advocate for myself because I explained my purpose in life, how I was feeling, the reasons why my grades were going down, and what this can do for me. And so I convinced my family and I had to take an hour and a half bus and train ride to get to Rocking the Boat after school every week, like twice a week. And at the end, the program would end around 7:30. So it was very dark. And I would just walk up from Hunts Point and get on another hour and a half bus ride on a weekday to come back into the other side of the Bronx. And it was literally a life change. It was a dedication. It was a team. It was a community. It was a family. It taught me things like uncomfortability by taking me on my first camping trip for an entire week. And it also taught me things myself, how to advocate for myself, to understand what it is to work as a team and know what it is to be a leader. And leading is not necessarily being in the front. Just a whole bunch of different soft skills that I was unaware that I was learning as I was learning things about oysters and eels. And so, yeah, it was just a really interesting program. And as that occurred in my life, I realized how passionate I was about this organization, Rocking the Boat, And it was because of what it did to me, but then also allowed me to do onto my peers and then the new students after us. It allowed me to be an educator. And I didn't even know I had educator skills in me.
So I kind of feel like in our introduction, we buried the lead that most of these organizations are youth development organizations that are part of this alliance or this network around the country and a few internationally that work with youth and adults to develop the folks and teach them not only tool skills, but as you so well expressed, those interpersonal skills and ability to communicate, to advocate for yourself, building self-confidence, self-esteem, finding, you know, areas that you become passionate about or interested in and learning new areas to explore as a young person.
Yeah, I've been very impressed with Rocking the Boat. The founder, Adam Green, and I believe the director, and they just started another Rocking the Boat in San Francisco. And the many workers like Manny and Juan, you can see why the program's so successful because of the leadership. Like Manny and Juan, their knowledge was really impressive, but like their interpersonal skills too. And Alex talked about that and what it meant for her, that relationship with instructors and, as we like to call ourselves, old people with the young students, how important and dynamic that is too. So I've really been impressed with Rocking the Boat, and really a lot of things I'm trying to do here at Urban Boat Works in Camden is modeled off the success that they have had for so many years.
It's a very interesting dynamic, and I think it really stems from the students into the staff and the staff into the students. One of the successes that I would say in this organization was the fact that Adam hired alumni into the senior staff. So it brought the culture of what matters. And I think all of the organizations in TWSBA have this, which is community, togetherness, you know? And for Rocking the Boat, Manny is a great example, and myself, we're alumni. And so when we have new staff members come in, we're automatically there for them. We're there to help them out. If they feel like they need assistance, we're there to assist. If they feel concerned about something, we're there to inform. And then we just joke around. Funny enough, JP, Juan Pablo, he's just super busy right now. And I was eating Chinese food and he's talking to me about something. And I was like, eat a chicken wing, you know, like eat a chicken wing. You're running back and forth. I know you didn't eat something at all yet. And then, you know, he grabs one and he goes, and that's all of us. Like, we're all there for each other, but the drive is the students. And then they see the way that we work and they work the same way. There's something about immediate respect. And I learned that being in school and teaching in school. So I worked at the Department of Education for 6 years with special education, self-contained. And these students are basically students with IEPs or BIPs, intervention educational plans or behavioral intervention plans. And what happens is that these students, they just get very upset and they're very, very mad because either, you know, they don't understand the work or they're having issues at home and they don't know how to express it. And what I realized was that they just come in with zero respect. Because they never received it. They're immediately upset and they're not gonna listen to you. And one thing we start here is I started in the school system and I gained it from organizations like Rocking the Boat, is I'm gonna give you 100% of my respect and I'm expecting you to start it off with 102. And what we do, whatever happens with what we do there, that's how it goes down. We can bring it back up, but it can go down.
So wait, Alex, just a sec. Can you give an example? Like, how do you do that? You have an example of doing that with a student where that worked or what techniques you use?
Sure. One of the techniques we use is called the community agreements. We draw a picture. We say, what would you like the class symbol to be, right? Or, you know, what is a picture of something that like represents this program? and we draw a picture and we say, okay, what we put inside this picture is what we want to see, and what we have outside of it, drawn outside of the actual frame, is what we don't want. We're going to go around and you're going to tell me what you want here. I'm not in charge of this class. We're in charge of this class. So I'm not going to tell you here are the rules. That makes no sense, because now I'm telling you, you got to follow me. So I want you to tell me what are the rules that we are all going to abide by. And so they all go in and they write what they want, what they don't. Like, you know, they don't want sexism, racism. They want they want friendship. They want experiences. And at the end, we all have to sign, all including staff. And as we sign, that means we all made an agreement. So therefore, you are accountable of your actions. And everybody, I'm not holding you accountable. We are all going to be holding you accountable, and yourself, you should be holding yourself accountable. And anytime something happens or they joke around and they make a little remark and it's like part of off of the community agreements, I'm like, hey, community agreements, man, like you're failing us. Like, it's not you're failing you, you're failing us. And eventually you just start realizing that they don't want to fail everybody, because everybody's here making sure that they're having a great time and they want to stay. And the way that we make sure they have a great time is we play a lot of games. They're at school for 8 hours, told to sit and listen, not told to sit and speak, but sit and listen and answer when I ask you a question. Nobody should be sitting anywhere for 8 hours to sit and listen. And so when they're coming out, they don't want an after-school program that's telling them to sit and listen or even stand and listen. I'd rather say, hey, give me 5 minutes so I can explain what we're about to go do, and then we'll do it, and then we'll come back, and then we'll talk about it. Because there's better absorption when you actually just do the actual activity first, then explain, all right, now let's do it. And what happens is that they start having fun, and they don't want this to go away. So if they don't want this to go away, they're going to abide by their community agreements. And that's basically it. It's full-on experience with full-on respect. Nobody took it away from you yet. It's your choice if it goes away.
So what is that structure? And Kevin, chime in too at Urban Boat Builders too, how you guys structure the program so people can get a sense of, all right, we're working with youth, we're doing all this great stuff, we're connecting, setting up agreements, making sure everybody's involved and having fun too, in addition to being there and learning. But what are the kind of the nitty gritty, like how do you structure this thing? How does it work?
Well, we start each class, we get together in a circle and we put our hands over the boat and we can say a prayer, or we ask everyone how they're doing, just to kind of show that we're a team. I like to say, not too original though, that we're all in the same boat. And I'm glad what Alex said that too, because of getting right involved is we'll do a short explanation of what we're going to do that day and then dive right into it. So we're, by the time they take their coats off and get in the shop, we're really on the boat within 5 to 10 minutes. So I find that is a way to engage them. And once they get working, that we can talk and explain as we're going on what we're doing. We built a lot of cedar strip canoes. So it's a lot of gluing and stapling, and it really takes everyone to work together. And so we're able to get to know each other, which I find so, so important to develop that relationship that, like Alex says, that they want to be there. They want to come back.
And Kevin, how many kids at a time are you working with? What ages? And how long are the sessions? And then each boat build also to get a frame around it.
So we work with, in the city of Camden, each year to meet our grants, between 65 and 75 students. And they're all middle school to high school students. And they come to the boat shop generally for an hour. And it all depends on their transportation. Like later this morning, I have to run up school and pick up our middle school students, an advanced class. And I have them for an hour and a half, but the ride's 15 minutes. So really an hour. And I find anywhere between 45 minutes to an hour with middle school students and high school, we can get a lot done. And we have some community builds. And I learned this too from Rockin' the Boat, Ryan McCormick, who's now at Urban Promise, who's working at Rockin' the Boat. And he explained to me that they have a number of community builds that where more than one cohort or school will be working on the same boat. And that really has worked well for us. So even though the class might only be 45 minutes to an hour, and I have one at lunchtime today, I have another one coming in at after school that's going to be working on the same boat. So that seems to work well for us. And we also do some individual classes work on a boat on their own too. And that's more volunteer driven because they're used to working with plywood, the marine plywood, the stitch and glue, rather than the strip canoe. So yeah, about 70 students a year, middle school to high school, and they're all in the city of Camden, come to the boat shop.
And so then do that goes throughout the semesters or the school year, and just summer camps too, or what?
We do. We've had summer builds, but generally we start in the first semester and we continue throughout the second semester. And then the second Saturday in June, I believe it's June 11th this year, we have a boat launch where we invite all the students from all the different cohorts. And our grant's written that we have between 10 and 12 cohorts too. So there's that many different schools coming down here. So we all meet up at the Cooper River Yacht Club and we launch the boats that we have just built with all the students. And it's a really powerful morning because the parents actually get to see what we do each day or each one class a week with the students. They might hear about it, just like people watching this podcast who aren't familiar with boat building. They might hear what it means, like to build. Or when we say we're building boats with students, they really don't grasp it. But when they come visit the boat shop and at that boat launch, they actually see, and the students get to paddle the boats with their fellow classmates, boat builders, and also with their family members, friends, and parents. And last year we had over 100. I know that because I actually have our boat building launch t-shirt on. One of the volunteers paid for, and we had 75 and we gave them out to the students. And we had many more adults and friends there. It's usually September to June is the build, and we could do some over the summer, depending on meeting the grant requirements.
Yeah, so All Hands Boatworks will do builds in the shop, but also we'll go out to schools, and some of the programs do similarly. And you show up with the tools and the materials, you know, there's sort of these lumber and some of the pieces are pre-cut and that, but there's still a lot of assembly and work that needs to be done, and tell the kids that you're going to build a boat and they kind of look at you skeptically, right? In the Midwest, you know, these kids are kind of like, yeah, right, we're building a model, right? No, and we're like, no, it's going to be like a 12-foot rowboat. You'll be able to get in it. And they're like, oh, we don't want to get in anything they built. They don't trust their own work, right? And then, you know, you get a few sessions into it, and we try to get them at least for an hour because, you know, right, by the time you get set up, get going, and then clean up afterwards, you know, you might have 40 minutes or a half hour of good work going on. And then, you know, several sessions into this, the boat takes form pretty quickly, and then the kids now are starting to see it. And I remember we had one summer boat building camp where we're building four boats in the shop, and we're, I don't know, partway through the first day, and the shape is there of the two sides are connected in the front with the stem, and there's a center frame that then holds the sides, and then we're about to get the transom on. We got a piece of line tied around there to hold it in place until we get the transom fastened in the back of the boat, and the kid goes and looks, turns his head sideways, looks down the line of the boat, and he's like, it's a boat. Like, you know, he finally believes, right? And then they take ownership. And then you're right, that launch is really powerful. It's the big payoff of like, here these kids are going to get into their own work and trust it and float on the river or the lake or the harbor or wherever you are. And then they just have a blast.
Yeah, I had that experience last year at our launch. And not to sound self-serving or pretentious here, but I tell this quick little story to our volunteers and to other instructors and boat builders like you and Alex and Twisba, just to kind of support the work that the volunteers and you guys are doing. This one middle school student, her mother had passed away suddenly that week. And there she was on Saturday at the boat launch with her father. And I said to her, my condolences, I'm so sorry, but you didn't have to come. And the dad says, oh, no, she wanted to be here.
Yeah.
She wanted to show me what we did. And during the course of the year, she was kind of quiet. And I didn't know if we were making an impact, but it was so moving. And then she asked, well, can my father and I get in the boat first? Because my mother's funeral is this morning, later this morning. And of course, I said, of course you can. But I use that story to say that I didn't know if we were reaching her. But here she is on the saddest day possibly of her life, that she wanted to be with her father and in that boat that she helped build.
That's beautiful. There's something about water that people just are drawn to. And it's really, it's not the liquids. It's what happens around this. That's the group. I see that a lot here too. And I think that what's beautiful is that she wanted to share something lovely before she had to go experience something very sad. I've had a lot of teenagers have that same experience where something really bad happened, but they still show up. And it's because this is like their home. It's like their second home. It's their safe spot. And that's what you were to her. And that's what a lot of these organizations are to these kids. It's a safe spot. I personally understand that because that's what Rocking the Boat was for me when I was a high school student. And then when I was in Rocking the Boat as a program assistant, which is the young educators that used to be students, now being a lead role and paid role where they teach the students, the new students. When I was a program assistant, we have a trip that we do. It's like a week-long trip, and we converted it into a sailing trip, a sailing camping trip. So we would sail to different points all the way up to Connecticut and camp in three different stations. Unfortunately, in that year, one of my closest friends, who was a program assistant for the boat building section here, she collapsed. And when we took her to the hospital, we found out she had a brain tumor. She passed away at 22 years old. And it hurt Adam a lot because she wrote a passionate letter to Adam when she was not a student any longer because she was an immigrant and she was getting her green card. And she sent Adam a letter basically stating, just hold a spot for me. I'm going to come back. You know, I really love this place. Please, please, you know, find a way to help me get there. And he did. And they found a way to get her to work here. And she was elated. It was the best thing in her life. And so for her to pass away such a young age, Adam decided that the boat that they were building was going to be Melly, her boat. Coincidentally, her last name was Boltzmann. And so that's the name of the boat. And her first name is actually on the pace seat of the rowboat. And the whole entire boat is the colors of the Antiguan flag because she's from Antigua. And now we dub that the alumni boat. So whenever we have events like our boat launches that we do as well at the end of June, Melly's always there too. And so it's a home. It's a family. And you're part of that young girl's family. There's family that you are born with, right? And then there's family that you choose. And she chose to spend that moment there before she had to go. And that's the beautiful part. And that's honestly why I decided to work with Twisba, was because when I was at Port Townsend and I saw all these organizations you know, talking in passionate stories. And you said it yourself, you're going to go drive to pick up some kids. That's an effort of an effort of love, a labor of love to pick up these kids, to bring them there for their experience. I was like, oh my God, like all these other kids around the United States are getting what I receive. We got to keep this going, because someone said this, and I really believe it. Organizations like this is what can change the world, because it's a reform in education in another method. We're not, yes, we can incorporate academics, but we're reforming soft skills. We're bringing back common sense. You know, we're bringing back prevention of mistakes, you know, like preparedness, awareness, readiness, all these different things. That's something that you don't learn in those 8 hours in school, right? Or even doing something like taking a tough day like that and saying, you know what? I have to find something healthy before I go see something hurtful. How young was that girl, if you don't mind me asking?
Seventh grade. So that would probably be 13-ish?
12, for a 13, yeah, for a 13-year-old girl. And honestly, I can believe that because I work with the middle school students and they're so mature. But for a 13-year-old girl to process something like that, that's the beautiful part right there. That's why I love these organizations.
Yeah, it's very kind of you, Alex, saying about me picking up that loving the students. Of course, I do. But the real credit, and I was wondering with Rocking the Boat and Patrick too, is we have such a strong volunteer group here, 15 to 20 volunteers. It couldn't work without the volunteers. Besides their knowledge base, there's such wonderful people. I mean, it just wouldn't work without them. And to see their interactions with the students, and they get as much from these builds as the students do. And so it's really a symbiotic relationship, and it's very powerful to see. And, you know, in the beginning of the school year, they don't really know the volunteers. Most of our volunteers are people that look like me, older. And by the end of the year, the launch, you know, the hugs and high fives, it's just wonderful. And there's that relationship, like I'm sure every boat shop says this, but we say we build 16-foot cedar strip canoes, we build 12-foot marine plywood kayaks, but the best ships we build are relationships. So that's what we're trying to build down here. And so at the boat launch in June, to see that, even if the boat sinks, oh, don't want to jinx myself for this year, but as long as those relationships are built, we can always patch a hole in a boat.
Definitely. See, but you said that, I remember a boat launch where we were like, it was close that the boat wasn't going to be launched, and Manny worked overnight on it to make sure it was, and it was a sailboat. And when they took it out, they were raising the sail, and something got stuck. But the kids that are on the boat, instead of being like, oh my God, they just went right into it and they fixed it and whatever. And then while all the crowd was watching, it's just like, you know, fixing it up. And then they all turn around, they're like, yay! You know, and it's just like, we don't care if the boat sinks, we're still having a great time.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. The best ships that we build are relationships. I agree with you. These volunteers are amazing. We too have our elderly volunteers, which I'm sometimes I'm wondering, why are you still doing this? We have one that, you know, he's been with, we have a lot that's been with us for more than like 10 years already. And it's really beautiful to watch a teenager, you know, just like, hey, you know, hey, Joe, how's it going? How's everything? And they're just having this amazing conversation. And there's such an age gap in between, but you don't see it. And it's because what's happening is they're talking to each other with the immense amount of respect. And that's it. You're an intellectual individual who is such a kind person. And and the other person's the same. And then that's it. That's all that they're having is just this beautiful conversation. There's no, you know, age gap. There's no differentiation in their lives or their privileges. There's nothing. It's just a beautiful conversation. And that allows opportunities for both of them. And I think that these volunteers also feel like these type of organizations are like their second home. You know, it makes them happy. It's their mental health. And so because we create these venues, these places that are safe spaces, everyone, volunteers, students, us, we all like to be there.
Very cool.
Yeah, I love it during the course of the year, Alex and Patrick, is, well, the very first class, obviously a safety class, and I always say to them, is our number one rule is no one's allowed to get hurt. And number two is you have to laugh at my jokes. And so during the course of the year, my dumb jokes, you know, they don't really know what to make of them and kind of don't laugh. But then as the year's going on, they start laughing at my silly jokes while we're building the boat. And I just love it when they start joking back at me or poking fun. And to me, that kind of says, well, we're all equal. We're all in this boat together. We're building the boat. And like you can poke fun at your brother and sister or your best friends. You can poke fun at me and some of the other volunteers. And we go back and forth. And it just makes, for I think all of us, very enjoyable. I know it does for me.
Definitely. And that made me think about quality that all these organizations give is a sense of purpose. You know, as a teenager, especially, you're told that you need to take care of your siblings and I'm not going to be home at this time, so make sure food is on the table. Or you want money, go get a job, make sure you're doing great at school. But don't disrespect, please stay quiet, you have a curfew. Listen, listen, listen. And it's like, wait, am I an adult or am I a child? Right? And what can I do and what can't I do? And so they don't have a sense of purpose. They're just like floating around sometimes. And that's how they feel. And then places like these organizations, like Rocking the Boat and All Hands Boat Works and all these organizations, what happens is that they come in and they're like, I am a boat builder. I build boats. And I have my group and we joke around. And at the end of this semester, by gosh darn, I'm going to make sure this boat is built. Sense of purpose, you know? And that gives such an ability of better grades because now they kind of want to make sure that they're doing something with themselves, a better attitude because they don't want to get in trouble and ruin their success and their achievements. And so with that, it allows them to like, feel that they are existing in this world for a reason. And that just changes so much. It changes the way they hop on a bus to the way that they're talking to their friends at school, to the way that they're talking to their siblings or their parents. And yeah, that's what that is. It's just a bunch of people who have a role and they love what they're doing and they're chatting it up.
Well, and I think a lot of that confidence can come too from knowing how to build something, how to put something together, how to use tools to fix things. I mean, and in fact, that's one of the, I shouldn't say one of my favorite things, but it setting up a boat build and working on constructing a boat from scratch or from a kit with a group of kids, it's great when somebody makes a mistake in that I don't get bothered by that because I know, having had experience usually having the same mistake made before in a different boat build, that, oh no, that's okay, you know? And it's also kind of an environment where these kids are sometimes are chastised or given grief for making a mistake. And here in doing these boat builds, oftentimes the mistake then gives us an opportunity to teach them a different skill than later on or in that immediate moment of like, here's how we can fix this. And so that also helps build that trust and relationships that we're talking about with the volunteers, with the staff, with the kids, that then they get that sense of like, oh, we're here to learn. So, you know, and making mistakes is really kind of part of it. And that other lesson oftentimes that we'll talk about where you have different boat builders working together and we'll have multiple ways of doing something. And there's not necessarily a right or wrong way. And that speaks to that individuality that we all have too. So it's really, really great. And then of course the going back to the volunteers, how helpful that is and having their help, because oftentimes to get these boats completed while we're teaching, and that often takes time away from building the boats because you're reviewing a tool skill or talking about a safety element and not necessarily continuing to build the boat at different times where you need to step in and or have a little conversation or show and tell or practice. Then after hours, after the session hours, either instructors or volunteers will do, like you were talking with JP, coming in and working overnight, that what we would call fairy work, that the Keebler elves come down and start doing the additional work on the boat that the kids kind of know how to do but may not have had a chance to do, so that it becomes successful.
We fairy work here, yes, definitely. And you know, that's what I mean by like labor of love. Like a 9-to-5 is a job that we're not necessarily deciding to take because we want the success for them. And that's a really beautiful thing, because you're going to work for caring and not, you know, and need, yes, but more because you care. And I think that we have to pay attention that this is also a form of therapy for all these kids. Like, I remember one example, I had one student, now he's a boat builder, but when he was in my middle school boat building project, we would do woodworking, learning the safety skills, understanding tools, understanding how to build just simple things. He messed up and his piece of wood just literally snapped in half because he was using, I think, a Japanese jigsaw, and he just did something wrong. And he's like, oh, and it's funny because he's a really sweet kid and everybody loves him, but he was just so pissed. He's like, I'm done. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this anymore. And I'm like, you know, Alvin, that was his name. I was like, Alvin, like, it's okay to make a mistake. Like, it's okay that you made a mistake, because you're right. Sometimes they're never told that it's okay to make a mistake. And then stepping back and talking about it, also not in their reality. And then practicing and then getting better. These are all things that are what I speak about, like soft skills. That allows them to be like, all right, well, this didn't work out, but give myself some grace, because it's not like I don't know how to do it. I just have to try it again and see and fix the error that I made the first time, you know? But he didn't have those skills at that moment. And at that moment, it was up to, you know, me to kind of introduce him to those and like let him understand you could have grace. Like, you permission for grace does not come from me. It comes from within you. And now he's a boat builder, and you know, and that, he has his mistakes. A lot of mistakes get made sometimes still, but he's not upset at himself the way he used to be. And that's even, you know, part of, in my opinion, part of like, even like the safety process is like understanding to just be present, you know, and just focus on the now. And you'll see when you're in the now, less mistakes are made. And that's just, it's really interesting to see how building a boat really can create. And that's what Rocking the Boats, you know, slogan is that, you know, kids don't build boats, boats build kids. And what that is like, as they're building that boat within themselves, they're building their own behavioral growth.
That's a beautiful story, Alex. And I say that too, with the mistakes that the students make, or I certainly make many, a boat full of them, that I kind of compare to youth sports. Like, in youth sports, you can learn a lot more from losing than actually winning. Sportsmanship and grace, like you talked about, and determination. You're going to come back and practice harder. And I believe the same in boat building. When a student makes a mistake, you can learn, they can learn, their crew can learn how to treat each other, not to blame, and just, like I said, the mistake can be fixed. Well, rip that wood out. I show them the scrap pile of wood, mostly mistakes. So, yeah, that was a wonderful story. I see the benefits of learning from mistakes and building boats and how that helps to build character.
Well, and it's amazing how, you know, we have this instant culture in the U.S. or in the world sometimes where everything's supposed to happen instantaneously, and learning's not like that. You know, when you're learning a new skill, you don't get it the first time. You got to practice it multiple times, you know, to get it right. And having kind of reminding kids that, yeah, you're not going to get it right the first time, or very rarely. And even then, with repetition, it takes a while to build those hands-on, hand-eye coordination skills to actually do things. And it's, you know, book learning, some people are very good at that, and they can pick stuff up very quickly, read it once or twice, three times, and they have it. And then, but other people don't. And often those are the kids that struggle with school that are much more adept at the hands-on learning and pick that up more quickly. So it's really interesting, and yet these skills are universal. They're helpful to every kid, whether they were to go to college or not, in that then they at least know, kind of, I joke, which end of the screwdriver to pick up, so that if something in their life later on breaks, they have a sense of, like, how do I get to fix that? Or how can I start to approach to making a solution, or talk to a tradesperson that is going to tell me how to fix it and follow along what they're saying and not feel like I'm just getting taken advantage of?
Yeah.
So it's important life skills in addition to the interpersonal development that we're giving too.
Definitely. It's the technical skills. You can be innovative and you can be self-reliable. I have a program assistant who has their own apartment, and they have, like, it's a studio. And so they wanted to build a door so they can make it into a bedroom. And they came in into the shop, bought their, you know, their piece of wood that they got at Home Depot, and they made their door. And Manny came in and gave some pointers on how they could, because they wanted to make a barn style door. So they chopped it, and I'm just like, wow, man, I'm a little jealous of, like, all your boat building skills. Cause, and I have some, but not, I'm more of the environmental sailor kind of on water person. I was never in the boat building program per se. So they have amazing skills that just allows them to build a door in their apartment. Or my favorite is one of my graduating students who moved to Florida and started his own business with something so simple and so intelligent. You know how people have their television mounted on the wall and all your wires are just showing, and then you can buy that little thing to kind of, like, you know, condense where all the wires are. And he's like, no, I'll just tear the wall apart, hide the wires underneath, and plaster up the wall back in, and then it's like you have no wires anywhere. And he created an entire business where he just drives to people's houses, he tears up the wall, puts the wires in, closes up the wall, you know, mounts different things up for them. And that's his life. And he's doing something that he knows how to do, and it's generating profit for him. And he's just a young guy living his best life in Florida right now, when he was over here in the South Bronx, you know, having a very good life, but also dealing with a lot of struggles that living in a very big inner city gives you. And now he's capable of just allowing himself to live the life he wanted to, with skills that he grew and adapted and learned from.
Yeah, we need tradespeople. There's a dearth of skilled tradespeople. The baby boomers are retiring or moving on away from working. And there's not been that group or cadre of new, younger trades folks to backfill all those positions. And so I joke that, like, these next couple generations, that if they get into the trades, they're going to be able to kind of charge whatever they want. Like, what are you going to do if your toilet's backed up? Are you going to argue about the price?
Definitely. And good for them. You know, it's not easy, especially, I know you understand this, Kevin and Patrick, the students that you're having, most of these kids, if not, they're in a minority group. They're struggling to understand what their future is going to look like. Is this something positive, or is this going to be something negative? Who are my friends? Because my friends could really determine my outcome of my life. There's so many different things that they're dealing with, that going to college can be a possibility and actual thing for them, but does that lead them to a career? You know, a lot of times I have friends who go to school for psychology, for example, and COVID did help for a lot of those at that time, but there was a lot of students that graduated college and did not have a job. But trades, like you said, they definitely need a lot of people working. And I just heard one high school student tell me how he wants to be a welder. I was like, man, you're going to make so much money. Because like, if you work in the parks department, they only have like 1 to 2 welders there. So you're important in that. And so these are some amazing skills that they can utilize. And you know what? Robots really can't take away a plumber's job just yet. Robots can't take away a carpenter's job, literally, not yet. And computers are really advancing. AI has taken a lot of office jobs, but there are jobs that are necessary by us. And I think that teaching them skills and trade it's very important. And it's, like I said, you're self-reliable. You can do a lot than a lot of other people can do.
Yeah.
Here at the boat shop in Camden, we have in the same building, a pre-apprentice carpentry program for 17 to 26-year-olds. And it's just going so strong. And I can show our students the skills that they're learning in middle school, high school, can be like a pipeline into this pre-apprentice carpentry program. And through Joe Yucha, we're working on getting certification also for our middle school and high school students for the skills that they learn that can go into these pre-apprentice programs. But one of our recent graduates just got a job or is going through training to be an underwater welder. And when they get their card, I guess union card, it's $65 an hour. We tell our students. Another one, Acre Shipbuilding is right across the river in Philadelphia, the Navy shipyard. Just got accepted into their carpentry program. So I try to encourage our students who are really interested in the boat building and carpentry, like I would say to my own children, to like pursue parallel paths. You can go to college and you also can learn a trade. You have time. I know I went to college. It's not that much time for homework and classwork, maybe travel. So we encourage the pursuit parallel paths now with getting your education and learning a trade. And like Patrick and Alex, you said, we see such a need and demand for that in this area too.
Yeah, and I think we've got not quite a pre-apprenticeship, but maybe it's like an exposure to the trades. In our program on Wednesdays, we have high schoolers coming in and getting some higher level carpentry and some boat building skills and getting some exposure to some of the other trades as well. And I can't say that we've had in the last couple of years since I've been there at All Hands Boat Works in Milwaukee that we've had anybody go specifically into the trades, but it seems like the kids are better for it. We do have a recent one of our after school high school program kids, which is we call our RAFT program. It's one Mondays and Wednesdays from 4:30 to 6:30. We usually have a snack beforehand. You got to feed kids after school or they're like hard to concentrate. I remember having a snack after school. You got to have it. But we had one of them go now to the Great Lakes Boat Building School and is going to get certified in wooden traditional boat building up there, which is a 1-year program. And there's a 2nd-year program to get an associate's degree. We'll see if he continues on to that. He actually stopped back at the shop over the break for the holidays and seems to really just love what he's doing up there and learning all these different techniques. He and 2 other classmates are building their own, I think it's like a wherry, which is a small, like 4 or 5 person rowboat that they're building from scratch up there in the UP in Michigan. So, I mean, I wouldn't say, I'm guessing from our experience that, you know, not a ton of kids going through our programs will go to the trades. It's still a small few, but it still makes a big difference in not only their lives, but then to help feed and encourage people getting in the trades. And then the other kids hopefully then are not as dependent and can do some of their own work on their own apartment or house. But when they get to that and not have to like, well, who do we call and be kind of helpless of fixing something.
Yeah, it's economically sustainable. It's better sometimes when you build your table than buy a table. I also think that's a good point, Patrick. Not every kid is going to want to go into the trade, but they're gaining these opportunities and these abilities that are memories, but also are ways to encourage the next generation. I personally can say that when I was between being a student and a program assistant, I've had opportunities to go to China to talk about oyster restoration. I've had opportunities where I sailed the Caribbean for free, not for free. The organization funded it for me, but for 14 days where I sailed from St. Thomas all the way to Turks and Caicos doing microplastic debris research. Like, these are amazing moments for me in my life. I've got to experience literally the other side of the world and how they experience things like, you know, communism and understanding what it is to go in and educate secretly so that people can understand what it is to advocate for their environment. I got experience to meet amazing people and sleep 14 days in the ship with them. I met a 12-year-old girl who started her own nonprofit with her parents called, you know, One More Generation, OMG, how clever. You know, and just meeting a 12-year-old girl who's doing these amazing things, you know, these experiences, just getting the ability to realize the world is so big. A lot of these kids that we're talking about, they don't even leave their neighborhood sometimes, let alone their state. And we're giving opportunities and to sail into St. Croix. We had two students just leave to do that. We had another set of students go to the Bahamas, sailing on a ship. And these are opportunities to be capable of understanding what it is to be your own individual in an environment that's not your safe place or your community. And can you thrive by yourself? Are you capable of being alone? Do you understand silence? Very big. The ability of silence. And all these things allow them to be like, okay, if I might not want to do trade, but if I go anywhere, I know that I can go in any state and thrive because I know what it is to be myself. But then at the same time, like, the opportunity to understand if this fails me, I have something to bounce into. If I don't want to be the lawyer and I went to school for so long to being a lawyer and I realize that my passion still lies in carpentry, I have these skills and I have some certifications and I can go ahead and get some more. Like, it's a great thing to be able to be well-rounded in academics and trade. And I think that, like you said, Kevin, and it's really important to have that ability to have a skill. And Patrick, I think that even though you have some students that are interested in doing it, Rockin' the Boat has seen a lot of our students are not interested in being a carpenter or a boat builder. But we have, like I said, like that example I gave you with one of my students that made his own business, we have seen examples of more interest in making their own businesses or even just preparing their life for the job that they want. But then we also see them switch around. We have some boat builders that went into sailing. We've had some sailors go into environmental. And so there's also, it's just the concept of allowing them to realize that they have more opportunities than just one track. And I think that's what you both are saying, is that we're changing that mindset. You have an ability to do a few things. It's not just one.
And Alex, you're a wonderful example of that. You know, starting in high school at Rockin' the Boat. I know you went to college and you studied environmental sciences and then teaching with your special needs student and now being an administrator with Rockin' the Boat. Here at Urban Trekkers, we take, that's the umbrella of Urban Boat Works, taking students out hiking, biking, camping, teaching them outdoor skills, leadership skills, and the Boatworks program. We also have EcoWorks, our environmental program, and all three are equal. It'd be wonderful someday if you're ever in this area, if you could speak to our students on your background and the work that our students that are part of the boat building program in EcoWorks, they're advocates for the Delaware River, these combined sewer were overflows of just, and we take them down there and they see the raw sewage going into the Delaware River right in between Camden and Philadelphia. And they talk to politicians, our students. So I was wondering too, with your new position at TWSBA as an Eastern Regional Director, do you see many of the boat building organizations too having an environmental wing? And I don't know if you do too, Patrick.
That's a really great question, Kevin. That's actually TWSBA's goal. The new push, the initiative is to incorporate environmental justice and environmental science in organizations or organizations that are currently doing it with boat building and sailing into TWSBA. We want to encourage that because we're building boats, right? And where do boats go? They go on water. And what's happening with our water right now? You know, the temperature change, the current, the way that the currents are changing, the plastic that's in it, and the wildlife that's dying. So if you want to be able to continue these activities that you love so much, we have to protect the environment that we're doing it in. That, first of all, Kevin, I want to set a date where I do go visit you because everything, wanted to say that.
We would love that. We have a wonderful environmental director, Sarah Lee Gonzalez, and she's getting her master's from Johns Hopkins on environmental sciences too. So we would love if you're in this area that you can meet with our students.
Yeah. And I also wanted to say, I do have my trade too. I'm a sailor. Actually, I'm certified level one sailing. And so like, that's also another part of TWSBA is sailing. And especially for sailing, if you're interested in sailing, you should be interested in the environment. 11th Hour Racing is really helping us with the ability to fund for TWSBA for this initiative, because it's very important to them that we also incorporate environmental justice into this organization's goals for all the organizations that we serve. I think that it's just a very interesting subject to introduce, because when it's a 1 hour day program, how can you incorporate all these things, right? Or if it's 2 hours a day, how can you incorporate environmental justice into your lesson? And so it's really about, and I say it's the target points, right? Because again, these students have been in school for about 7 to 8 hours. They really don't want to listen to another lesson. But they would understand it if it was impacting, right? If it impacted them. And I like to use the example of a very terrible day that occurred in New York, which was 9/11. At that time, I was probably in sixth, seventh grade. I never understood what a nice New Yorker was. All I understood was New Yorkers are all about themselves. And that day happened and you saw it. Everybody was just there for anyone. People were going back in the building to save people that they didn't even know. People were helping people in the street. Firefighters from everywhere were coming. Even the day after, you hop on the train and it was silence. Everybody was unified. Everybody was together. And that was because they honestly understood that they had to play a role in helping. It impacted them immensely. It was right there. That was it. They understood. They understood what needed to get done, and they understood why this mattered. Sometimes, unfortunately for Americans especially, we need to get hit before we can see it. And the environment is a really hard thing to see if you're not looking at it through, you know, a chart or something like that. So one of the easiest impacts that we do to show our students how important this environment is you row to where the garbage is, and you row in the garbage, and you show them this is what you're going to keep rowing into if we don't fix the problem. Or you make them scientists. You know, you do something as simple as water quality testing right before you start your build or right after you're doing your build. And you say, hey guys, I just want to show you the water quality that we're about to go row into. Bam, this is what we're seeing. Why do you think we're seeing this? What do you think is contributing to these things? And how can you solve them, right? And CSO is a great example. It's combined sewer outflow. What that means is when the sewer system is packed because of heavy rain or overwater usage, unfiltered sewage water enters bodies of water all around the area, right? So for us, it's the four bodies, the Bronx, the Harlem, the Hudson, and the East rivers. That means you can't swim in your rivers, right? That's one of the reasons why we can't swim. How can you make an impact off of that? How can you fix that? Well, fewer showers, turning off the faucets, not using chemicals during a rainy day because you know it might overflow into the river because it's a rainy day. Simple contributions, right? You just did a science lesson in 15 minutes. And you allowed them to understand, maybe I should tell my mom not to wash the floor, you know, clean the floor on that rainy day, because now I know where that bleach goes. That allows them to understand, hey, this is visually impacting me, and I don't want this to do that to my future generation, so therefore I'm going to make a change. And so I think that the impact is what really matters. And unfortunately, sometimes for us, it's when we see it or when we feel it that we want to make a change.
This is the beauty of teaching with small boats, is there's so many tangents, there's so many lessons that can be brought in. And what we're doing is just broadening the horizons of the youth, the kids that we're working with in a variety of areas. Like, we get out for a row or a boat launch day, and I like to talk to some of the kids and say, you know, we're here on the Menominee River in Milwaukee, and if you take this out to the confluence of the Milwaukee and the Kinnickinnick and the Menominee, and then out to the harbor on the Lake Michigan, then you can go down to Chicago, you can then go up the Chicago River and down the Sanitary Canal, and then into the Illinois River and out the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico, or you could go through the Great Lakes the other direction out to the East Coast and eventually end up in the Hudson, you know, and the Atlantic Ocean. With a boat, you can really almost go anywhere. And so that concept is kind of mind-blowing, especially for a middle schooler. But we're so connected. You can take these lessons into so many different areas. And that's kind of the cool thing, is that then at each of our programs, depending on, you know, what resonates with the kids and where hearts lie as far as instruction go, we can delve and get pretty deep into a lot of different topics and help enlighten and educate kids and give them experiences that they wouldn't otherwise have.
Patrick, our founder of Urban Trekkers in 2006 started the Urban Boatworks program in 2009. And when he was asked by the students, why are we going to build boats? He would say, well, you just said, a boat can take you anywhere.
Yeah.
And the metaphor being in a boat, but also their dreams, to have them to dream big. And Alex said that too. And her life's a wonderful example of growing up in South Bronx, being a good Yankees fan, and then spending 14 days in the Caribbean a few years later. We stress that with our students too, that a boat can take you anywhere, and to encourage them to dream big.
Yeah, this is great. We've covered a pretty good, say, the waterfront, as it were, for another metaphor. And maybe we can kind of wrap up. Does anybody have any additional or final words, things that they want to get in that we haven't chatted about? Because this has been a really fun conversation.
Yeah, I just checked the time. I think we've been talking like an hour and 15 minutes, and I have other questions I would love to ask Alex, but now that she can come and visit us here in Camden, I'll save the questions when she can visit. I really want to thank her for her leadership with TWSBA. As TWSBA is going to another level, we're trying to do that here at our boat shop. Use a Latin phrase, adelante, siempre adelante, forward, always forward. Another metaphor with the boat, but also in our programming. And I feel TWSBA is doing the same. And it's very exciting times. And it's just wonderful to have Alex's leadership.
Thank you. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Patrick. I will say I am working hard on TWSBA's work here. What I was going to say was that one thing that we were covering this whole entire time that we didn't even label was assessment. The way that we see these kids' successes through these small stories, these accomplishments, this awareness. And there's so many different ways that we can assess the success of our program and the success of their growth that doesn't have to be written. And I think that that's really, it's a really interesting way because it's allowing us, it's kind of like it feeds the staff to keep coming every day when we're assessing their moments of their aha moments, their oh my goodness, I get it moments. And I think that that's something that we should cover. I most definitely am going to go see you, Kevin, but maybe we'll do a part two because there's a lot of things that TWSBA is doing currently, like I just mentioned, youth gatherings that we can talk about and why those are so important. Why is it important to have other students meet kids from other places of different states, different countries? But yeah, I think that I had a great time talking with the both of you. And I think that TWSBA as an organization and a coalition of people are all excited to see what this next year is about to bring. And my goal is that we just keep getting fed those aha moments, those success moments from all these kids.
Thanks, Alex. This is great. This is why we wanted to talk to you to open up this podcast as one of our outstanding new young leaders that has come up through the Rock in the Boat organization. And I hope to have more conversations like this. And I'm sure we'll get back to you again with another episode. And there's so much more to delve into.
Thanks, Patrick.
Thanks for being here. All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Patrick and Alex. And happy paddling.
Happy paddling, Kevin. Take care.
Thank you, everyone.